Hello and welcome to Politically Enraged, a podcast made for the lefties amongst us. Politically Enraged is a podcast about politics, both British and further afield, and a place to talk about society and how it needs to be improved for everyone. You can find us on Twitter at Political Rages, Instagram at Politically Enraged. You can sponsor the show on Ko-fi, or you can follow my personal socials. I'm Davey Moo, across all social media, and I'm here to talk to real people about real problems and work out how we move forward. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to a very belated Season 2, Episode 1 of Politically Enraged, or you can think of this as the gap between seasons. This episode probably isn't going to be seen by a lot of people. It's not particularly relevant, but it's important that I put it out there for the people that do want to hear it, just as an explainer of what's going on with me, both politically and personally, because those things are unfortunately inexorably intertwined at the moment. And you'll understand as I go on. For those just stumbling across this, hi, my name is Davey Moo, and I have been a political commentator since late 2020, where I started commenting sarcastically on all of the ridiculous things we were going through, and ended up somehow in the spotlight to an extent. And it was a really weird experience, but it was something that I really treasured, because I got to meet some really awesome people and do some really cool things. And evidence of that lies throughout this entire podcast. All the people that I've interviewed, all of the things I've discussed, it's all been really interesting. And I really hope to continue it. But I need to lead on to why I've been so quiet. On a personal level, I have depression. Chemical-grade depression. Weapons-grade depression. And it sucks. And occasionally, it just takes over. And I wish I could explain what it's like. I get so frustrated with Hollywood's representation of depression as someone sitting in a room crying, listening to sad music, and or even just sleeping all day. The way I experience depression is, the only way I can put it is greyness. Everything's grey. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to talk to anyone. I go into this thing that I call dying cat mode, because it's well known that cats, when they get older and sicker, kind of just wander off to be alone, to die. And I kind of do that. I go off into the middle of nowhere and I just deal with stuff. And I'm in that phase at the moment, and it's a really weird place to be. I don't enjoy it. I know it's not healthy, but I do it to myself all the time. And I wish I understood why, but I don't. I know it's probably not the easiest way to deal with it. I know it's probably not the best, but it's just what I do to cope. The fact is that the political and social sphere of the UK and the world is enough to get you down without having chemical grade depression. And I do. So it took me a lot longer than I expected, but I reached a point where I just couldn't take any more bad information. If you look at the news, and if you look over the retinue of things I've talked about, it shouldn't really come as a shock. I think one of the things that has really gotten to me is seeing the unabashed, naked hatred of what I'm going to call small boat people, which is bizarre, isn't it? If you think about that, if you think about the way that we talk about these people, small boat people, the key word there is people, not small, not boats, not small boats, but people. I don't care why these people want to come here. Unless they come in with outwardly malevolent ideas, I don't give a shit. Because most of these people are fleeing horrible things. And the amount of ridiculous rhetoric that's around it, oh, these people coming from this country, a lot of them are young men fleeing being dragged into the army. Wow. Isn't that terrible? Do we force people into the army here, or is that something that we outlawed a long time ago? We don't do the draft. I know that other countries do national service. One of my friends, or my old friend, should I say, fled Greece because he didn't want to be drafted into the army against his will, because he's a pacifist. So if people want to flee their home country because they're being forced into violence, so be it. I'm good with that. But the fact that this is mainstreamed, and the fact that we have a Home Secretary who has made it her bread and butter to talk shit about these people, just ate at me every day. Every day I woke up, I looked at the news and I saw just open hatred towards these people. Glee about the idea of sending them abroad. With no concept of why they were coming here in the first place. No elucidation about that, I notice, Ms. Braverman. Did you notice that it's because of our machinations that a lot of these people flee the country that they're from? And even if that isn't the case, did you know that people are allowed to be refugees? It's like people think it's some kind of peace tour. It's ridiculous. The idea that people will get themselves into debt to dangerous people and climb into boats that stand a huge chance of sinking and drowning tens or twenties of them is ludicrous. They're not doing it for some kind of pleasure tour. They're doing it because they're desperate. And if you can't relate to that on a human level, it isn't them that has a problem. Additionally, I've stated this ad nauseum on my podcast. I'm not transgender. I'm a cisgender man. But the level of hate towards transgender people in this country is appalling. And that hate inevitably was going to spread to the wider community because the right saw it as a wedge to drive between us all. And I will not conditionalize anything on my support of trans people because I know trans people. I have a lot of friends that are transgender and I am not going to put limits on how far I will or will not support them because they're human beings and they deserve dignity. The chant is trans rights are human rights, and that's not rhetoric, it's fact. I've tried so hard to keep my patience with this chat, but if you understood some of the abuse that gets hurled at you when you are on transgender people's side, it's disgraceful. And the way these people who are so anti-trans have been radicalized is terrifying. There is no way on this earth that they should be this far down this rabbit hole, and yet somehow it's happened. And in my stronger moments, I feel sorry for them. If you look at how many of them are eating at their own life because they sit online attacking transgender people all day instead of actually making some kind of useful contribution to society, it's sad. But these people are also dangerous. I know people who are transgender or who are people that stand with trans people who have been through hell because these people put them through it. So I don't have sympathy and I will not keep patient with it. And I will not try and have robust discussion with people with whom it's not possible. It's tiring. And the fact that this is spreading further, the fact that in America we're seeing anti-LGBT plus laws, the fact that we're not allowed to talk about being gay in classrooms, but it's fine to tell people that you've got a wife if you're heterosexual, is balmy. You don't change people into being LGBTQIA. People just are or they aren't, and they're either aware or they're not. You can live your whole life being unaware that you are outside of, air quotes, the norm. But the fact is, people need to realize that the norm isn't white, cisgender, heterosexual. All of us fit into a bigger norm that a lot of people just don't want to acknowledge. And the damage that that does to the people that already are outside of it, outside of this narrow idea of what the norm is painful. And those two things in particular drove me to the edge of sanity because every minute of every day I was acknowledging every news article that was negative and I was reading it and dissecting it and refuting it. I was arguing with people about it and it gets exhausting. And I feel so bad for the people that don't have an option to put this stuff down, for the people who are under the microscope. People of colour in this country, I don't know how they keep their patience with the nonsense that they have to go through just to eke out a peaceful existence when surrounded by a bunch of people that don't even want to acknowledge the differences and treasure the fact that people have different experiences because of the colour of their skin, because of their height, age, weight, gender, sexuality. It's tiring. And everywhere you look, there's people crying about political correctness or the W word. I'm not even going to say because it makes me nauseous. And I don't understand what these people want. That's the cut and dry of it. I don't understand what these people want and it confuses me. And I am driven insane by not understanding things. And that's where I'm at. I'm so burned out that I find it hard to acknowledge the news because it just makes me want to get into bed and not get out. That's how I experience depression. It just makes me not want to care. Not that I don't, but that I wish that I didn't. And it's exhausting. And that's where I'm at right now. That is part one. But part two is also personal, and it's kind of related to mental health. I discovered a little while ago that I think I have ADHD. And if you looked at the broad span of the internet, you would see so many videos of people making light of it and talking about the funny little things that you do when you've got ADHD. Or you know you're ADHD when you watch three screens at the same time, which I do. You know, you're ADHD when blah, blah, blah. All the jokes are great and some of them are really funny, but there is a really horrendous side to ADHD that doesn't get talked about a lot in the public sphere because it's not as interesting. I feel like I exist in a dream state because when I dream, time doesn't really have relevance, and that's what it feels like a lot when I'm awake these days, especially. I will sit down in the morning, and I'll make myself a cup of coffee, and I don't remember sitting down, because I'll have made the coffee on autopilot, but I'll have also been checking my phone and reading things, or Googling things, or watching a video, or leaving a voice note. And that's okay and all well and good, but it happens all the time. It happens at work. It happens when I'm in the middle of a conversation and I suddenly realise that I've stopped listening to someone, even though what they were saying is important or interesting even. And I experience a lot of sensory issues which are driving me up the wall. Noise is a particular thing that's been really bothering me. And so scrolling apps endlessly and having videos play at me has been driving me insane. And so I just wanted to stop doing it. When it comes to the podcast, it was interesting. There's a big difference between the videos that I put out where I try and be engaging and funny and you know, keep people's attention with humour, and a podcast which I think has had a much more serious edge to it, because I want to talk about the real severity of British politics and politics further afield as well. There's a lot going on at the moment, and I'm not completely ignorant to it. I still look, because I can't help it, because I'm me. But what's happening at the moment is particularly scary, and it gets difficult when you can't see a positive. I'll give you a good example. Donald Trump. So he is being indicted. If he goes to prison and is no longer in the running for 2024, that leaves a completely different right-wing scumbag, someone who is markedly more intelligent than Donald Trump and who has been better at marketing himself to the extreme wing of the Republicans. And he might win. And if he wins, it's just fascism with a different label on. And when it comes to the UK, I was told regularly, a year and a half, 2 years ago, that I was being pejorative and ridiculous and dramatic by using the word fascist when it comes to our government. And I don't think that I'm being pejorative. I don't think that I'm making it up. I don't think that I'm lying when I say that I'm concerned about the fascist movement within our government. Because they scare me. And if they don't scare you, I don't know whether you're paying attention or not. Let's look at some of the examples, because it's obviously a very dramatic and very important thing to call someone fascist. When our government started aiming to restrict the right to protest, I was concerned. Everybody who knew about protest was concerned. And they carried on. And we threw protests, and we wrote different types of letters to them, and we did everything we could do to say, do not change our right to protest. And they did. When the Paterson scandal broke, they changed the rules around how to punish politicians at first, because they didn't want us to punish Owen Paterson. The government is currently mad on for taking us out of the ECHR, which is ironic, because Owen Paterson is going to the ECHR over breaches of his supposed privacy during the Paterson scandal. It's funny how one arm of the government thinks that it's useless, and another arm of the government is using it for its own ends, isn't it? Strange. Coming after our right to strike and making it so that we have to have minimum service levels, completely missing the point of what striking is all about. Striking is about removing a service so you realise the value of it and therefore make sure that the people keeping that service going are compensated fairly and are safe. The NHS is in shambles in a million different ways. I don't have to tell you that, but let me give you two examples from my own personal life. I am waiting for a referral to MSK, musculoskeletal, because I have an extremely painful neck, which has been going on for a year now. Additionally, I am waiting for my referral about my ADHD. I finished my paperwork and sent it over on the 31st of August. It's now April the 4th, and I haven't heard anything. They're just personal examples. There's the cost of living crisis. What are the government doing to alleviate that? Nothing. Giving themselves pay raises while the rest of us are suffering from inflation, putting up misleading nonsense, Boris Johnson misleading Parliament, and then trying to skirt around any kind of accountability. There are perfect examples, and in isolation, one of these things does not mean a fascist government, but a government that wraps itself sinuously around the media that you take in, that distorts messages, that lies to you, that takes away fundamental rights, that gives you enemies that are not your enemies to focus on instead of them. Those are all tropes of fascism. If you look up what fascism is, this government is becoming that. And it is terrifying to look at. It doesn't mean we can't win. It doesn't mean we won't win, but it means that we have to be cognizant of what's going on. And the reason that I've been quiet is that I don't feel like I'm able to keep up, because sometimes it felt like they were winning. And that's the way that it is in these silly ages of moral panics and fighting against a government that's completely dropped the ball and knows it, and knows that its only chance of survival, its only way to recoup its losses, is to say, let's just put a lot of obstacles in their way. This government knows its bacon's cooked. But the question is, what do we do about it as individuals? How do we handle that? How do we fight back? And that's a question that I kept asking myself every day when I was making videos. Because I ended up feeling like a rage merchant. I would come on the internet and I'd make a video. And occasionally, yeah, I would say about a protest, a thing to sign, something to do. But mostly I felt like I was just complaining into the air and that wasn't doing anything. Having had a bit of time away from it, I disagree now. I understand that it's necessary to keep people in the loop and to tell them in ways that is accessible and interesting and engages them and gives them the real meat. You don't have to move the world on your own. It's a collective thing. I think that's another thing that frustrates me, though. The UK's political scene is really disappointing at the minute. And I know that I've pissed people off with the way that I've gone about talking about it, but I think I'm only being fair. I have to be honest with you, I'm vastly disappointed in all of the ways that we can change our government at the moment. The Tories need to go. They're scum. They're evil. And I use that word with full intent. I know exactly what it means. I know how weighty it is. And I think that they are. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that I am. I've seen the way they've behaved. I've seen the rights that they've taken away from us. I've seen the lines of rhetoric that they're going down with regards to minoritised people. And they make me sick. I think that they're evil. And the problem that I have is, I can no longer fully disagree with the people that say that every viable alternative that we have is a pale imitation of that. I'm not saying that Keir Starmer and Labour are evil. I'm saying that they're not as good as I want them to be. I want to vote for Labour with my whole ass. You know, I want to be able to go into that voting booth and say, yeah, I voted Labour because I'm proud of what they stand for and I think they'll do a really good job. And at the moment, I can't help but think, I'm going to have to vote for you because there's nobody else and I think that you'll probably do an all right job. You'll probably sort out the economy. You'll probably fix some of the problems that we're facing. But what about the issues that really matter to me? What are you going to do about those? I had a conversation today with someone about Rosie Duffield. Keir Starmer's not going to get rid of Rosie Duffield, because if he did, the British press would absolutely wank itself into a frenzy. Poor Rosie Duffield kicked out of Labour for knowing what a woman is. So there she's going to sit. And Keir Starmer could handle it a hell of a lot better than he has. He doesn't have to say, well, I agree with gender critical people and I think Rosie Duffield's great. And he doesn't have to say, I think Rosie Duffield is evil and I don't want her in my party because her views are disgusting. All he has to say is, you know what? There are a hell of a lot of people in this country and some of them are gender critical and Rosie Duffield is a good politician who has these views. And if there are genuine concerns that women have about transgender inclusion, then I want to hear about them. And that's why I'm keeping Rosie Duffield in my cabinet, because I want to know about what's going on with the gender critical movement. And I want to hear if there are genuine founded concerns. I don't know whether there are. It's not for me to decide because I am a man. Would it please people? Probably not. But it's better than this ringing silence. And it's better than calling yourself the Party of Equality in The Times, a newspaper that misgendered and deadnamed a murdered 16-year-old trans girl the same week that he wrote an article patting himself on the back for coming out of special measures for anti-Semitism in Labour under Jeremy Corbyn. When it comes to Brexit, like, what is Labour's even stance? Oh, yeah, we're going to make it work. Oh, good. Are we going to have 5 more years of we're going to make it work rhetoric? We're going to change the laws. I don't think you understand that laws have to be ratified on both sides, and I don't think that you understand that the EU wanted Brexit to be a massive failure because they wanted to drive other member states away from the idea of leaving. It was never going to work because we still have to have dealings with the EU because they're our neighbours and because we import a lot of things from them and import a lot of things to them. It was always going to be a failure because we still have that relationship. It's just now they hold all the cards, and we were stupid enough to think that that meant our freedom. And Labour is endorsing that. And I don't understand why. And me calling that out isn't me being a Tory enabler. It's me asking valid questions that other people seem afraid to ask. When it comes to immigration, Keir Starmer was on LBC a few weeks ago. And he said, and I quote, well, there's not much between Labour and the Conservatives on immigration. that is not a sentiment that I want you to espouse. Not the least because of Suella Braverman and her matriarchal evil bullshit, but also because this government fundamentally doesn't understand immigration. When you look at what's happened with regards to Brexit, it turns out that there's loads of legal challenges about the pre-settled and settled status scheme that they came up with to help people who came here from the EU before the Brexit referendum and before the Brexit deadline. This government doesn't know what they're doing. So if there's not much between Labour and there's not much between the Conservatives, that's a concern, because what you're saying is, we don't know what we're doing. I would like you to know what you're doing. And I know that Yvette Cooper comes across as very cogent, and I hope that she does a good job. But I really hope that that good job is my version of a good job and not the good job of a gammonate, because I do not want another version of Labour with cups that say things like Labour on immigration. Fuck that. I hate it. When it comes to Wes Streeting, what are you doing, man? Like, in the nicest way I can say this, my whole career, my expertise is, it's nearly 13 years now working with the NHS, working alongside and within the NHS on recruitment and supply. When it comes to the shortfall that we have for staffing and when it comes to the issues that we're facing, half of it is that the NHS is run on archaic guidelines, which is why you don't get treatment fast enough. I can tell you that right now. There are many ways that we could clear backlogs, including modernising the way that we treat people and conditions. Additionally, when it comes to the amount of money that's flowing through the NHS, no, there isn't enough, but it's also not being directed into the right places. They just throw money at the NHS in little wadges and hope that that's enough to plug the hole, but that doesn't work. There needs to be a holistic approach. Additionally, I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a pandemic going on that's still quite bad. One of my workmates was sick with COVID last week. Even though it's nowhere near what it was before, the coronavirus is still around and it's still dangerous and it's still impacting on the services that we need to manage. So until our government actually gets some kind of courage up and says, here's the things that you might have to temporarily sacrifice so that we can have an NHS that works, it's going to continue like this. But finally, the government want to outsource the NHS because it will make them money and they will be able to invest into it, because the government is a hardcore capitalist machine under the Conservatives. Labour want to buy into that, but call it by a different name. And I'm sorry, Mr. Streeting, but I'm calling you out on your bullshit. I've already written an article on this. If you read the blog, then you'll know. But I really need people to understand the absolute fallacy that Streeting is pumping out on his ridiculous ideas. Streeting's whole thing is that he's going to, and I quote, temporarily outsource different areas of need to private companies. And he's going to review those private companies, and then when the backlog's down, he's going to cease the contract. Do you understand how capitalism and these companies work? Okay, I used to work for these companies, and let me tell you what they'll do. They will keep a manageable service going. They will definitely address some of the backlog, but they're never going to get rid of it all, because that's how they make money. The second you capitulate and give money to them, you are locked into dealing with them. And that is going to become a big problem if it's something that we do. We have to look at restructuring the NHS without adding in any aspect of capitalist nonsense, because the second that we do, the NHS will cease to function the way that it is. It still might be free at the point of access, but we will still be spending vast sums of taxpayer money on enriching people who are privately owned. And that is not what we need to do with an institution as fantastic as the NHS. It needs modernization. People that knee-jerk defend the NHS really do my head in. I've worked for it. There are problems in there. There's problems with nepotism. There's problems with staffing. There's problems with resources. But they can be addressed. They just need to be addressed by someone who is brave enough to call them out and who isn't owned like half of the government is. We are not going to fix the NHS by following what Labour wants us to do with it. And I really encourage people like Wes Streeting and other people in Labour to consider very carefully how they want to do that. Because if they want to go down the route of temporary outsourcing, you've privatised the NHS. Just in a slower and more sinuous way with a different name and a fancier bow than the Conservatives would have. And I don't want that. When it comes to education, there is a reason that our government refuses to put money into education. And in the nicest way I can say this, it's because stupid people vote Conservative. And I'm not saying that every single person that votes Conservative is stupid, but what I'm saying is stupid people tend to vote Conservative. So if you make a lot of stupid people, a lot of people that are stupid are going to vote Conservative. Fortunately, it seems like there's this amazing wave of braveness amongst the youth of this country where they're going to end up standing up and fixing the problems that we've caused or contributed to. I am 35 years old. Why people of my generation have not wrenched this government out of parliament already, I don't know. But we really need to do something. I don't want the responsibility for this country and for the world even to fall on people my nephew's age or my niece's ages, because that's wrong. We had the chance to fix it, and we shouldn't be leaving it to the next generation. We should be dealing with it now. And that's one of the biggest problems that I have. Every day when I was really, really obsessed with politics, I would wake up and I think, why aren't we writing? Why aren't we doing something? When's it going to happen? What's the snapping point? But there's this malaise, and I don't understand where it comes from. And don't get me wrong, I'm guilty of it too. Have I done anything? No, but someone's got to cast the first stone at some point. And it is going to happen. And I don't know what's going to be the tipping point, but it needs to be done. Our governments need to remember to be afraid of us, and they aren't. And it's depressing. Because ultimately, we hold the power. And this government is doing heinous things under our name, pretending that they're doing the will of the people, a phrase that turns my stomach. What is the will of the people? Because if what's the government's doing right now is the will of the people, damn ashamed of us. And maybe we deserve to be under the Conservatives. But I don't want to be forever. There has to be changes. And until I can reconcile the weird options that we have, and until I can make myself believe more in the options that we have, I don't know what to do. And I'm not making this podcast to piss people off. I'm not doing it so that I'll upset people. I'm not trying to pick apart your well-founded arguments that any change is better than none, because I do understand. I just think that we need braver change than we're being offered, and it's depressing. I really hope for better for this country, for the people of this country, because I think that we deserve it. But at the same time, I'm tired. Not just about politics. You know, being burned out because we have shit options, well, that's done always been the case with politics in this country. It's with personal stuff too, but I have to admit that one of the reasons that I just find it hard to talk about politics at the moment is I have to wonder what it's going to be like when the other shoe drops, you know? Are the Conservatives going to win again? And if they do, how fast can I get on a dinghy? And if Labour win, are they going to bring bold, happy change? Are they going to make things better? Or is it just going to be another pale imitation? People on the further left bang on about Tony Blair and what a scumbag he was. And you know, he really needs to go to The Hague for what he did with the war. I understand. But there were some bold and bright changes that his version of Labour made. They missed out on some important stuff, though. They could have reversed a lot of the anti-protest stuff that Thatcher brought in, and he didn't. And I understand that a government can only do so much, but we really need bold, bright change in this country. We really need people to be galvanised, and we really need to work to undo the damage of the Tories. And we really need to work together as human beings and find our caring for each other again so that we can fight for a better future. And I just don't see that happening. So the reason I'm quiet, the reason that I'm in between seasons on the podcast, the reason that I'm in between being able to talk about politics and not wanting to at all, is because of all that. And I really don't want to upset people. I don't want to piss people off. I'm just saying it like I see it. And I understand. I do understand that people might get mad by this, but I'm beyond caring. I've got to be honest. And I've been saying this for a while with increasing vehemence. And you can disagree. You're entitled to do that. But that's how I feel. And I fear I'm not wrong. Until I'm back and ready to really start talking about politics and hitting the ground running again, I apologize, because I know that a lot of people liked hearing my thoughts on things. But there's a lot of people out there fighting the good fight. There's a lot of resources to go to. And hell, maybe you need to take a break too, because this is a lot to handle. And it's okay to step back sometimes. A lot of people think that they can't, but you can. And that's exactly what I'm doing. Because I am no good to anyone when I blunted my edge. I hope everyone's doing well, and I'll catch up with you soon. Thanks as always for joining us here on Politically Enraged, the Lefties Refuge. If you do want to follow me on social media so we can chat about the episodes and future upcoming information, you can follow me on Twitter, either at Political Ragers or Davy Moo. You can follow me on Instagram at Politically Enraged or Davy Moo. And you can follow me on TikTok at Davy Moo. If you do want to sponsor the show on Ko-fi, you can just search Politically Enraged on Ko-fi. Join me again soon for another episode of Politically Enraged. And remember, get politically engaged and stay politically enraged.